This is Open Lines Radio. Here again, your host, UFO paranormal researcher and journalist, Alejandro Rojas.
Hello and welcome to Open Minds Radio. This is Alejandro Rojas, and we have another exciting show because we have a major debunker. Just kidding. Everybody says this poor guy's a debunker, but he's just a hardworking photo and video analyst. He is MUFON's analyst, Mark D'Antonio, and he's worked on a lot of great cases lately, and one of the things I want to do is talk to him about his UFO experiences, how he feels about UFOs, some of his theories and ideas, because often people think that, you know, all he does is debunking stuff, and it's not his fault if, unfortunately, there are many people hoaxing UFO photos. And if you are one of those people, stop it. That's not cool. So we'll be talking to him about some of this stuff because he does have some great information, and he's a really neat guy, real funny guy. So this is going to be a really good show. I'm really excited about it. But welcome to the show at our new time at 7 p.m. on Mondays, Arizona/Pacific time right now. So we're a little earlier, so hopefully our buddies out there in the United Kingdom don't have to stay up, you know, till the wee hours of the morning to hear our show. Now they just have to stay up into the very big hours of the night to listen to the show. But we do very, very much appreciate our UK, our Philippines, and our other international listeners that we have throughout the world who email us with their stories. That's always a lot of fun. Also, I want to remind you, and we'll have a little reminder coming up here, a little promo about the UFO Congress, because we're signing up new people all the time. And if you saw the television show Fact or Fake, where they were in Arizona and they investigated a gentleman by the name of Jeff Willis, who had some UFO videos, and then they tried to debunk them, essentially tried to recreate them themselves, and weren't able to. And after they weren't able to do that, they decided to shoot some night vision of the sky themselves, and they got several UFO videos that were really good that shocked the heck out of them. And, you know, they went back to their analysis, and they thought, wow, these really were UFOs. We can't explain what the heck these lights flying around the sky going one direction super fast and then turning around and go the other direction and stuff like that. So you can check that out. I think they have most of it, parts of it on YouTube. They even have it actually at their website, Fact or Faked. Is that what it's called? Fact or Faked? the UFO show. So check it out. Although our good buddy Chuck Zukowski said the cattle mutilation episode was really bad. So don't watch that one. Just watch the Arizona one. But the point I was getting at, which I almost forgot, was that Jeff Willis, who took that video that they analyzed, will be hosting and doing a little talk at the Skywatch that we're going to have at the UFO Congress. We're really excited about this because we've talked the people who essentially kind of host the area to allow us to stay later into the night from about 10 p.m. till midnight. We'll actually be there all the way from 7 p.m. till midnight, but they usually kick everyone out at 10 o'clock. They're going to let us stay and do some skywatching. We're going to have some night vision goggles. We're going to have Jason and Maureen, which is very, very exciting to have them there with us. We'll have the whole crew, Antonio, Michael Schratt, our video guy, Tom Ruffin, DJ, John Rayo, Angela Rayo. If you know who those guys are, some of you don't because they kind of stay incognito. They don't like to like get in front of the cameras and everything. But these are all people who help make Open Minds run. And speaking of running, we're so excited about our magazine because our new magazine is being shipped very soon here. The latest edition, which is mainly focused about around UFO landings and the Rendlesham Forest case. Now, if you're thinking, wow, that's great, you have to be a subscriber to get it in the next couple of weeks. Otherwise, you're going to have to wait and get it from the bookstores. The bookstores are loving it, many of them. We've gotten a lot of great feedback. We've heard of bookstores that are just really excited and trying to carry as much as they can. And so they're going fairly quick at the bookstore. If you want to get yours as soon as possible, which I advise because you want to be up on the latest and greatest, you want to be the guy to go to the water cooler and say, so did you guys know XYZ about Rendlesham Forest? Because if you don't get the subscribe and get the magazine earlier, then your buddy at work is going to upstage you, and he's going to say, hey, yeah, I knew that. Did you know this? And you'll be like, oh, man, I don't have the latest info, and you'll feel very foolish. So you need to subscribe to get the magazine as soon as possible, and you'll have that pretty little puppy in your hands within, hopefully within like a couple weeks if you go to the website, openminds.tv, and subscribe right now. It's beautiful as usual, and we're just always extremely excited about it. And in fact, we've heard from most ufologists, they love it. Call up your favorite ufologist, Facebook them, email them, and say, what do you think of this whole Open Minds magazine thing? And they'll probably say, you know what I think? It's awesome, and you should get it, because they're all our buddies. They've all mostly been on the show, or they're scheduled to be on the show, and they're all loving it. So we are very proud and happy that is the case. And we include stories from some of your favorite ufologists. So we're very, very happy about the magazine, and we hope you love it too. One of the great things about our website and MUFON's website, because they host our news, is that we have news updates on a regular basis. This is conventional news covering the whole UFO arena. And one of the great things about our radio show is that we have Jason McClellan here to talk about the news. And the biggest news story I didn't touch on, because I wasn't sure if you were going to or not. I forgot to ask you. So let's see if you do.
We'll see. Greetings, Dr. Alejandro, and hello, world. This is your Open Minds News Brief for Monday, September 13th, 2010. Now, we'll start with a cool story, and this story reminds me a lot of ASU's theoretical physicist, Paul Davies.
Ah.
In July of 2001, the rain turned red in India. Witnesses also reported seeing green, yellow, and black rain in the following months. The initial theory was that sand or dust was giving the rain its colored appearance, but a local physicist looked at the rain under a microscope, and surprisingly, he found that the water contained cells that looked like bugs. This led him to theorize that the bug-like cells originated from a comet that had exploded above the Earth and seeded clouds. Having studied these cells for 9 years, the physicist says that they are unlike anything found on Earth. It has been determined that the cells begin to reproduce at extreme temperatures, nearly 250 degrees Fahrenheit. Many spores on Earth can survive that kind of heat, but none have been found that are capable of reproducing at that temperature. The cells also display odd fluorescing behavior, as it's called. The cells change color when exposed to UV light. This behavior remarkably corresponds with the red emissions from the Red Rectangle Planetary Nebula that is 2,300 light years away. This similarity doesn't prove extraterrestrial origin, but could suggest it. It's also interesting to note that these cells contain no DNA.
Yeah, really weird, and it's an exciting story. One, because it reminds me of the song Red Rain, which I like, and two, because it's so strange. The red rain stuff has always been very strange. It's been a phenomenon for a while. It's kind of a paranormal thing. But you know what? One thing we should probably mention before moving on, and we could discuss this together. And I was going to say it at the top, but I thought it might be your first story is Wendell. So our good buddy Wendell Stevens, because if you've been to the website, you have noticed last week was Wendell week, and we still even have some more information. And that was because, unfortunately, our good friend, the retired Lieutenant Colonel Wendell Stevens, passed away at 87 last Tuesday, a week from tomorrow, at around 4:30. We've got some conflicting times of like 4:20 or 4:44, you know, short period of time. But essentially, around 4:30 p.m., in the Tucson area, which is where he is from. And we were fortunate enough, of course, to, as you know, if you're subscribers to our magazine or watch the website, have a very close relationship with him because we have his archives, and also he spent a lot of time with us, you know, giving us information, giving us interviews, and he liked hanging out here. He was really excited and happy about a group that's into ufology to get his information out. And on our website, we've been putting up UFO video pictures and things like that. So unfortunately, he has passed away, if you were not aware, and we were just very fortunate to have him.
We have a wonderful video on our website that our executive producer, Tom Ruffin, put together, a tribute to Wendell, what sort of final interview that Wendell gave us here. And he did spend so much time with us here and really felt like just another member of Open Minds,
mm-hmm.
part of the family.
Yep. Is there any particular case or anything you can think of that really struck you with him?
You know, every time I got to sit down with him, it was something new.
Mm-hmm.
I always heard another story from Wendell. Wendell always had an unlimited supply of stories from his 47 years of mm-hmm. research. So not one single story sticks out in my mind. It was just the fact yeah. that there was always a wealth of knowledge, this unlimited supply of stories from Wendell, and it was like this very knowledged person sharing his wisdom with people, and you just kind of sit around in a circle staring yeah. and waiting to see what he would say next.
And I never saw him get upset, never heard him say anything bad about anybody, even though there are a lot of, especially the Billy Meyer haters out there and stuff, who have been really mean to him. And even now that he's passed, unfortunately, there are people who have said some really mean things about him, or just judgmental about maybe his past and things. But he was always a very kind, kind person.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. So we'll definitely miss him, and I wanted to say something sooner rather than later on that. So sorry for interrupting.
But now you have me so depressed, I don't think I can go on.
You can do it, because this is, you know.
All right. Well, thank you. I didn't start it off because of that reason, but
we both probably thought, oh, you're going to do it. No, you're going to do it. So,
well, this story has me, I don't know. I don't know how I feel about this one. I think I'm a little upset about it, but Hollywood has many UFO-themed movies coming to the big screen, but several shows are also coming to television. One of these shows will star Billy Ray Cyrus and his son Trace running around investigating conspiracy theories. Like most of these reality-type shows, it sounds like this one will mostly focus on debunking and more about pushing Billy Ray's other kid into the spotlight rather than focusing on investigations. And with the title UFO, Unbelievably Freaking Obvious, I'm not expecting too much out of this Sci-Fi Channel show.
Yeah, neither am I, unfortunately. I mean, they had a great hit with Hannah Montana. I don't know if they're going to have a hit with this one. And, yeah, it sounds like they're just going to go around debunking. And, unfortunately, you know, well, we hope they do. We'll see if they do their research. I'm skeptical that a country singer and his son are going to do the research necessary.
Well,
but
you know, they both supposedly have an interest in the subject, whatever yeah. that means. You know, Billy Ray Cyrus was initially scheduled to play at the Roswell mm-hmm. Festival, but pulled out at the last minute.
Right.
But, you know, they are supposed to have an interest in the subject.
Yeah.
So we'll see what they do with it.
Yeah, we'll see. Hopefully, hope for the best, but be prepared for what media usually does with this subject.
We'll be prepared for what we're expecting.
Yeah.
James Oberg, a space analyst for NBC News, recently criticized Leslie Keene's new book, UFOs, Generals, Pilots, and Government Officials Go on the Record, saying the book is based on questionable foundation. Contrary to Keene's assertion, Oberg calls pilots poor observers. In response to his comments, Keene wrote a piece on the MSNBC. Too many letters together. MSNBC.com. Pointing out that Oberg seems to have missed the point behind her book, and even suggests that he might not have even read the book that carefully. She admits that 95% of UFO sightings are eventually identified, and her book is only concerned with the remaining 5%. She also points out that Oberg is not really objective because he is a founding fellow of the Committee for Skeptical Inquiry, a group whose aim is to debunk UFOs and any other unexplained phenomena that challenge our familiar way of thinking.
Yeah, very frustrating because he's referring, you know, to a lot of cases she's not, doesn't even have in her book. The other thing, he says pilots are bad observers because they're too busy flying their plane, and he's referring to commercial planes where they've got to take evasive action rather than observe something. But the cases in her book are often jet fighters who are observing these things and flown to observe these things. He's also neglecting the fact that some of these pilots were generals or people who were overseeing these incidents, which included radar. So it wasn't just a visual, anecdotal type of thing. It included radar and an entire, sortie of planes and things. And then you have Fife Symington, for example, who was a pilot, but he was on the ground, standing on the ground when he saw the Phoenix lights. And it's his opinion that that was a huge craft that was beyond our technology, that is extraterrestrial. So his argument is not really focused on what the meat of her book is about.
And some of what he did that led her to believe he didn't read that carefully,
right,
was he was criticizing and quoting things she said in the book when she didn't say those things.
Mm-hmm.
Many of the things in the books were actually written by the witnesses themselves.
Exactly. They weren't her quotes. They were the witnesses of people like generals, like
right,
in the Belgium flap and the Iranian situation, stuff like that. Great book, so go check it out.
Absolutely. Here's some potentially good news. Britain's government announced that it will be reviewing the country's extradition policy in light of recent controversial cases, including the case of hacker Gary McKinnon, a man the U.S. wants to extradite to face charges of hacking military and NASA computers in search of records of UFO activity. A small panel will be appointed to determine whether or not the existing extradition policy with the U.S. is unbalanced. This offers some new hope for McKinnon, but the panel will not issue their report until the end of next summer, meaning that his already 8-year ordeal doesn't show signs of resolving anytime soon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And what is interesting, too, is that the president, which you covered a few weeks ago, but that's kind of interesting that this subject got brought up with Obama, and he said he would take appropriate action, which seems like he's going to be lenient. But
who knows what that means? That's
yeah,
a very bland answer.
Yeah,
it's a very safe answer that doesn't say anything.
Yeah, not really.
But you do bring up a good point. I mean, it's remarkable how much media attention this case has gotten.
Yeah. Yep, a lot. And unfortunately, we wrote a story on it, but the meat of what he found was, well, there wasn't a whole lot of meat. It is anecdotal type of stuff. So we'll see what happens. The cool thing is if there is a trial here, it'll get lots of media attention.
Right.
If it's out there, it'll get some. That'll probably cross the lake, as they say. But here we get more.
I believe it's pond.
Pond?
Cross the pond.
It's bigger than a pond. It's bigger than a lake, though.
We'll have to ask our friend Ross Hemsworth.
Yeah.
As I've mentioned the past couple weeks, the push for UFO tourism seems to be popular right now. Here's another destination being pushed, Area 51. Now, that might sound odd to some of you, because Area 51 is a highly guarded, top-secret military base, after all. So what could there possibly be to do on a tour of a place you can't actually get to? Well, the Area 51 tour includes a tour of Groom Lake, which is sure to be met by forceful involvement by the military. The tour also travels the extraterrestrial highway, stops at the little alien restaurant, and goes by many signs that say things like, top secret military facility, and use of deadly force authorized, which is sure to make you feel quite welcome.
Yeah.
Being monitored at every minute and having guards ready to confront trespassers, it's no surprise that the Area 51 tour is being pushed as an extreme tour. And what might you expect to pay for the pleasure of risking your life? $180 will buy you a ticket for an Area 51 tour. But if your kids want to go, children's tickets are available for $160.
That's relatively cheap, And if I'd just be worried if you're camping out there and you go to the restroom in the middle of the night, they're probably going to be watching you with night vision. So you're probably watched even in that instance. So,
Good for them. I've got nothing to hide. Less than 2 months after the still unidentified UFO appeared hovering above an airport in Hangzhou, another UFO has been seen in China. The bright object was visible for at least 3 hours and was witnessed by many. Another bright flickering object appeared above the main object and was visible for about 10 minutes. Two news reporters followed the object and were able to capture photos and video.
Right, yeah, I mean, China's hot spot.
Are you talking about the weather or the UFOs?
UFO.
Okay.
It's hot. No, this is the hot spot weather-wise.
It really seems like it. You know, every week we have many multiple sightings in China.
Yeah.
And these are sightings that are seen by mass groups of people.
Well, what I think is interesting, too, is that it almost seems to be the UK 3 years ago.
Right.
3 years ago, UK media started picking up on sightings and really never stopped. It's been huge. And then the files get released out in the UK, which causes more media attention, and UFOs are in the media in the UK constantly. Now, China seems to be kind of the same thing. It's this momentum that's taking shape out there. And UFOs are more and more in the media in China, which is pretty exciting because in the past, especially with ufology, it's been hard to know what's going on out there because at least a couple of papers, Chinese papers that have an English version, they really didn't cover so much. So it's really interesting to have this. It's great for our news headlines because now we got even more headlines to post internationally. But it's cool to see an interest being taken up out there. And hopefully that momentum will continue. Actually, you know, as you probably know too, or obviously because you're covering these stories, but Australia seems to be picking up on a lot of UFO stories, and you see more of their news, including UFO stories. So we've got more of these countries with this heavy UFO coverage.
Right. That's certainly not to say that things are slowing down in the UK at all.
We
have sightings
all
the time in the UK.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing with the UK right now, it seems that, you know, they have their modern-day weather balloon in the Chinese lanterns.
Yep.
There's so many sightings, yet everything is being blamed on Chinese lanterns.
Yeah. A little overdoing it with the Chinese lanterns. Of course, they're probably right, a lot of them are, but not everything, you know, not a lot of these things that don't have any similarity to Chinese lanterns.
Talking about another country, Russia may create a center for UFO studies if Kherson Ilyumzhinov has his way. Ilyumzhinov, who is the president of Russia's Republic of Kalmykia.
Or they spelt it wrong. They didn't put the IA in that story.
You're absolutely right, because I remember it's Kalmykia. Because
he's in the news again today.
Right.
And it didn't say, it has the IA, Kalmykia.
That is what it's supposed to be, Kalmykia.
Yep.
So the Republic of Kalmykia. And he's also the president of the World Chess Federation.
Mm-hmm.
And he would like to build, he'd like Russia to create a center for ufology. He has been quite outspoken in the past about his personal encounter with extraterrestrials. Ilyumzhinov leaves office next month, and this could give him more time to devote to pushing the idea of the UFO Center.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he was in the news today because he's leaving office. Now they're trying to kick him out of, his opponents are trying to take over, which they did this before when he was in the news. They're trying to say, oh, he's into UFOs and aliens, so we need to kick him out as the president of the Chess Federation. But it didn't work last time, so we'll see if it works this time. And even if it does, it doesn't matter because this guy is independently wealthy anyway.
But that was, you know, really cool when they did that initially, when they brought so much attention to that they wanted the president to look into him and see if he was a security risk because he may have told things to aliens.
Right.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, it's so funny, this whole talk about exopolitics. Yeah. Was this guy doing some unauthorized diplomatic relations with extraterrestrials?
What secrets did he tell?
Yep.
An Australian woman claims that back in 1969, she was cut off by two alien beings in a spaceship shaped like a Ford station wagon. Her daughter told her there was nothing to be afraid of, but couldn't explain why she said that. It just came out of her mouth. The station wagon ship took off rapidly, surrounded by green, blue, and red flames. This is just one of the experiences told when ABC Morning Show host invited UFO believers to share their stories.
Yeah, well, that sounds more like Back to the Future.
I was thinking it sounded like
gotta get back in time.
Other things that went on during 1969.
Yeah. But
that would be explained by the red and blue and green flames.
Trippy. But, you know, in the San Luis Valley, there is a phenomenon at night and during the day. They kind of had it in Close Encounters where it looks like there's a car driving along the road and then takes off. Sometimes they, during the day, they see what looks like a silver ball, you know, something when it's far off, and the San Luis Valley's flat, so you could see the road far off and you see this thing. Or people have seen, you know, at night what looks like headlights behind them, but all of a sudden they take off, kind of like Close Encounters where he waves it on and it, instead of going around, it goes over.
Let's do one more sighting.
Let's do it.
Witnesses in Magdalena, Colombia observed a UFO in the sky last Wednesday in the afternoon. The UFO was visible for 15 minutes before disappearing. One of the witnesses managed to capture a photo of the object on his cell phone. It's interesting to note that the Colombian Space Commission contacted the witness who photographed the UFO.
That's pretty cool.
They want to see what he's got.
Mm-hmm. Hopefully it's something interesting and they'll put it on the internet.
That'd be great. Alejandro, that's it for the news. Remember to check out these stories and more at openminds.tv, your source for UFO-related news. I'm your Open Minds news correspondent, Jason McClellan, and you've been briefed.
All right. Thank you, Jason. Lots of cool stuff. And you might notice Jason and I are wearing some cool new hats, Open Minds hats here. You'll be able to get those in the afternoon tomorrow at our openminds.tv. You'll be able to purchase these hats because the girl who does them, Maureen, likes to kind of come in, make some coffee, hang out for a while, and do her nails. And she just kind of takes it easy until the afternoon, maybe takes a nap. And then after lunch, hopefully she'll get around to it. But no, actually, she's extremely busy doing 12 different jobs at once, like all of us, because we got a lot going on for just a few people here. And a lot going on our website. And just to kind of highlight what Jason already mentioned, some of the stuff we have online. But we do have our story from Wendell Stevens, and I think it's probably one of his last stories, where he kind of highlighted his work. So he wrote it as a first-person type of thing, his work over the years. And that we posted in the first magazine. But we decided that would be a great article to put online for everybody who hasn't seen the magazine yet to be able to read. So that's a great interview that we have on. We also put up some clips from some of our last interviews because he was here so often that, you know, occasionally he would tell us stories like Jason talked about. So we would get him on camera and interview him and get some of these things documented. So like he mentioned, Tom, our executive video producer, put together a really great YouTube video that you can watch that has some of that information and then other information about Wendell himself. So a short bio and things like that. So we put a lot of Wendell stuff up there to honor him and the great work that he's done, which as anybody knows who's followed his career, he has done a lot of amazing things and had a lot of amazing experiences. In fact, I interviewed him a while ago on video right here in this studio. He was sitting, you know, next to me on this very table, I think. And that video is also online where you can watch that and my interview with him. And I really delved into some of his background from years and years ago in the Air Force in the Blue Book period of time, which was really interesting because as an Air Force officer, or back then he was, well, he was still an officer for much of his career. He was investigating UFOs, you know, some of the UFO experiences they had going all the way back to the 40s. So very interesting person with an incredible career, and you'll be able to see all of that online. But it is time for us to take a short little break so we can get our guest on the line and we can begin our interview with Mark D'Antonio. So hold tight. We got a couple promos we'll show, or we'll let you listen to, and then we got Mark.
Open Open Minds Production is proud to present the 20th anniversary of the International UFO Congress, coming to its new home at the Radisson Fort McDowell Resort and Casino in Scottsdale, Arizona. This is the premier annual event for UFO researchers, enthusiasts, and the general public with an interest in mysterious phenomena. Come listen to expert ufologists, government officials, and respected scientists presenting information relating to UFOs, extraterrestrials, crop circles, abductions, cover-ups, and more at the largest UFO conference in the country. The 20th anniversary of the International UFO Congress takes place February 23rd to February 27th. To the UFOCongress.com for more information, including sponsorship and vendor opportunities.
Having been referred to as the CNN of UFOs, OpenMinds.tv is the hub for news relating to the alien UFO phenomenon. With daily updates of exclusive photos, videos, merchandise, and investigations, OpenMinds.tv is bringing UFO and extraterrestrial research to a global audience. The website features the Open Minds store stocked with books, DVDs, and other merchandise, including Open Minds magazine. Visit OpenMinds.tv, the definitive source for UFO-related news. That's www.openminds.tv.
Are you or someone you know looking for the latest movies and publications containing information about UFOs and extraterrestrials? The Open Minds store is stocked with books, DVDs, and other merchandise, including Open Minds magazine, the leading bi-monthly magazine that explores the UFO phenomenon. Single issues, as well as yearly subscriptions of Open Minds magazine, are available in the store for both domestic and international customers. The recently expanded DVD offerings include dozens of documentaries and conference presentations by experts in the field of ufology. The ever-expanding line of products, including DVDs, books, and branded Open Minds merchandise, make the Open Minds store an online destination worth visiting frequently. Browse the store today at store.openminds.tv to see the latest editions.
Welcome back to Open Minds Radio. Here now, former official spokesperson for the Mutual UFO Network, your host of Open Minds Radio, Alejandro Rojas.
Thank you, guy, whoever you are. I don't even know the name of the guy who did that. He talked about me so nicely. I need to figure out his name. Maybe we'll just call him Bob. I can come back and say, thank you, Bob. It's me, Alejandro, and we're back with Open Minds Radio. And I should mention, because one of the chatters is talking about the chat there, and there are two chats going on because we are broadcast live on Blog Talk. They're the ones who manage our podcast service, so we go through them for the audio side. But on the video side at openminds.tv, you can watch us live on video. And we used Ustream, but we're a YouTube partner, and we actually, starting last week, post these to YouTube the following day as well, which is really cool. And hopefully, we will have a YouTube live streaming going here soon, and we'll get that up too. So, very exciting. I'm very excited because, if I am not mistaken, we have Mr. Mark D'Antonio on the line.
How you doing, Alejandro?
Hey there, how you doing?
Excellent.
Great, it's good to have you on the show. Always a lot of fun. And, you know, we did some video interviews with you and Laughlin at the UFO Congress, and we still haven't gotten those online. And so I figured, well, let's just get you on the show and we can talk about all that cool stuff we talked about.
Oh, I think that's a great idea. Thanks for having me.
Yep. So how long have you been with MUFON now?
My it's a complicated question, but only because I took a hiatus in between. I was actually a field investigator with MUFON back when Walt Andrus was running things out of file folders on his office desk.
Right.
Pre-internet, Windows, basically, where there was any kind of possibility for applications that would really do anything meaningful with the data. And then I took a hiatus for a number of years until a number of experiences that I had prompted me to start looking at it again, which then led to getting back into the photo and video analysis end of things, which I guess, 4 years now? 3.5, 4 years now?
Yeah, time flies. And you've been able to look into a lot of interesting cases.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there's been some very interesting stuff. And you know, I have to admit, I was shaking my head at the beginning of the hour when you said, you know, we're going to have a debunker on. It's like, oh, Alejandro. Good thing this is over the phone, Sally.
Yeah, what a smack me. Well, and the only reason I say that is, one, you're a good sport, and two, it's not true. And it's, you know, something that I hear very often, and so it's kind of like something you probably, I should probably cut it out because I probably annoy you because I bug you about it so much, tease you about it, but you're such
not
a great sport about all of this stuff that it's kind of fun.
Well, you know, Alejandro, in all honesty, the truth is, you know, we have to be hard on the data because what falls out at the end of the investigation, we want to be able to say is truly unknown. Otherwise, somebody who's better at us than doing, say, image analysis or able to handle the photos in a mathematical way with algorithms that we're not using today or tomorrow yet might say, well, they didn't do this. Well, guess what? We do make sure we do that. We do contact those people that have that ability when, you know, it's not all me with the photo and video analysis. There's plenty of other talented people out there that are, you know, in the loop to help do this. This isn't a one-person show, as you know. It's a team effort. And honestly, you know, when you look at the complexity of the cases these days, as you alluded to in some of your other broadcasts, you know, people can use Photoshop and do amazing things. As we're speaking, I'm just finishing up an illustration for a magazine that is due tomorrow. Well, I'm using a program that could also be used to generate photorealistic-looking UFOs in the sky and put them up on YouTube and start causing all kinds of crazy sensations. But,
right.
You know, knowing how to pick those things out from a real photo, see, there's science behind that. It's not just an opinion. There's scientific principle, and that's the thing that, you know, we can look at. You know, we can detect when someone's used a clone stamp in Photoshop across a photo. Your eye can't. I couldn't looking into photo, but the algorithms are unbiased.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we do have to be careful exactly for the reasons that you're talking about. And, you know, one thing is if we're looking for, and I think this is one thing people have to understand, if we're looking for the truth, then, and we're looking for the heart of this matter, sometimes you have to be conservative and rule out, even if something is an unknown, but it's not, you know, it doesn't have enough data to really give you any information, there's not much you can do with it. And that used to frustrate me when I first was working cases, and I go to Bruce McAbee or Jeff Sanyo, who were two people that were kind of your predecessors, although Bruce McAbee still works in this stuff. And I would show them a video, and they'd say, oh, it could be this, it could be that, and kind of blow it off. And I used to get frustrated until I got more experience, and I thought, well, let's say they were able to determine this one light in the sky that's kind of cruising across that looks very similar to the satellite is not a satellite because it did some stuff off camera that these people saw, and they could be telling the truth. But what can you do with that? That's not evidence that you can go take to the scientific community and they're going to be wowed by it. There's not much you can do with that, unfortunately.
Sadly, that's true, and there's cases where I receive photo and video evidence, and all it is a shaking spot in the sky with absolutely no point of reference, absolutely no way to tease any additional data out of it with all the tools I use and that other people have. And so we have to say, you know, yeah, as much as that looks like camera shake, the witness is insisting that that's not camera shake.
Mm-hmm.
Yet in the data you can see that the camera was zoomed in all the way, and he says it was handheld.
Right.
I'm sorry. Those are contradictory statements, you know, when they say like that. And as much as a bad guy that I seem to be sometimes, I have to tell you, I have a very thick skin,
mm-hmm.
but I'm also very open because one thing that most people don't know, although I did make I had a discussion about this at one of my talks, I think it was Denver last year, I admitted publicly for the first time that I had an experience that might very well have been a close encounter, where I had something placed inside my sinus. You know, my wife was involved indirectly. There were dogs in the room at the time, and this whole set of events transpired where the next day I woke up to my pillow and bed was covered with blood.
And, oh, really?
Oh, yeah, and I couldn't breathe out of that sinus for, and don't ask me why it took this long, for 2 years.
Did
when
you?
I finally went,
go ahead.
No, okay. When I went to the hospital, the doctor looked up into my nose and said, "Holy cow," he goes, "you got something lodged up there." He goes, "How'd that get up there?" And he took it out. And when he took it out, I said to him, I made the mistake of saying to him, "Can you check to see if it's something, you know, if there's a foreign body inside that mass you took out?" And he said, "Why?" And I could have just left it at that, but, you know, I told him the story. And he kind of looked at me kind of the way people look at you when you tell them stories like that.
Yeah.
And he said, "Well, no, no." He goes, "That's okay. I'll have it checked out." And so I called a couple weeks later to get the results, and lo and behold, there were no results. In fact, the thing he took out was gone. And
wow.
It's on record. It's at the hospital here in Connecticut, Hartford Hospital, you know. And then, in a casual conversation only some months ago, when I was there for another unrelated thing, he told me that he just had relinquished his top secret clearance for the Air Force. So, like, wow.
You're kidding.
I'm not kidding, Alejandro. And I said, "You're kidding. What did you do?" And, you know, he told me this in his doctor's office. He said, "Well," he goes, "I was part of the team, the only team," he says, "who's ever detonated a nuclear weapon in outer space." I said, "Are you sure about that?" I said, "There's been no record ever of a nuclear shootdown in space." And he smiled and said, "Yeah, I know. No record."
Wow.
Now, that's total sidetrack from photo analysis and video analysis,
mm-hmm.
but I'm giving you some background into why, when people say I'm at the bunker, I kind of just smile and say, "Well, I appear that way, but trust me, I'm a strong believer, but I also believe in strong data retention. I believe
right.
in making sure the data is right."
Yeah.
And that means making sure the analysis is right. So I feel bad when people bring me gorgeous lens flares that have the appearance of, you know, humanoid forms or something.
Right.
But I have to call it like I see it.
Yeah.
And say 99.9%, Alejandro, 99.9% is just not going to be what we're looking for. You've heard me say it. A lot of people heard me say we're looking for that holy grail of ufology, all right, which is that incontrovertible evidence. And someday we will get it because I believe they are here. I do.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, it's happened to me. I think it happens to every researcher. There's somebody in Denver, like, who goes around. It was a lady who gave me some photos, and, you know, I'm certain, because unfortunately, well, for better or worse, you know, I had a broadcast journalism background, so and film minor, so, and I took photography classes. So, I mean, sometimes there weren't people available, and I had to learn to do my best as possible to do some analysis. But you learn what a lens flare looks like, and sometimes people give you a lens flare. And like you said, you feel bad, but you have to tell them, unfortunately, you know, there's not much I can do with this because it looks like a lens flare, and maybe it wasn't. Maybe you saw something extraordinary, but unfortunately it wasn't recorded in this picture. And they get mad at you. And, you know, there's a lady that goes around Denver saying that she gave me pictures and I never gave them back, which wasn't the case in that. You know, I debunked the whole thing and blew her off, even though she has these amazing UFO photos. There's probably two or three people that have done that, even with me. And as people know, I'm like the nicest guy in ufology.
Yeah, you really are. You know, you really are. You know, and you know, in spite of what you said about me earlier, but I mean, you really are.
Well, I wanted to talk more about your case. What happened to you? The night that happened. Do you remember lights or anything weird prior to going to bed or while you were in bed?
Oh, sure. It happened over three nights, as a matter of fact.
And, oh, wow.
On the first night, I woke up to this banging on the roof.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you know, I don't know how much time you have. I'll try to make it.
Oh, we got time. Go for it.
Okay. At the time, I lived in a Dormer Cape Cod style house, and it was in a neighborhood, exactly from where I live right now, 5,280 feet, which is kind of odd in itself. But On the second floor, the neighbor's house is maybe 40 feet away, it's isolated. There's no trees over the house. I just heard this banging on the roof. And I woke up to it, and I, went back to sleep. The second night, I heard it again. It woke me up again. This time, it was a rhythmic set of knocking, which I thought, someone's at the door. And then I sat up and realized it's coming from the peak of the roof.
Wow.
And I had, at the time, two greyhound dogs rescued from the track. And my wife was still asleep in the bed next to me. And these two greyhound dogs were looking up at this knocking. They were looking where I was looking, because they were wondering what the noise was, too. They were drawn to that. So I got out of the bed, and they were sleeping under an open window and looking up. So I leaned over them to peek through on this beautiful August night and look through the screen, kind of like put my head against the screen and look up. And as I did that, I'm telling the absolute truth. I don't need to make stuff up. I got hit in the face with a bright white flash of light, and I froze, and I just stayed right there. And I looked down, and I couldn't see anything. All I could see was like a bright street light, a couple hundred feet away. That's all I could see. And as I got my vision back, I looked down, and I noticed that the dogs weren't there. They were gone. And I found the male hiding outside in the hallway of the bedroom. And he never slept under that window again, by the way. And the female was hiding in the closet in a pile of laundry that was in the closet in a basket. She was in there and wouldn't come out.
Wow.
I had to drag her by the collar. But what I did was I went over to my wife. And for all your listeners, this is part where you can really be mad at me. I shoved her, and I woke her up out of a sound sleep. And she goes, "What are you doing?" And I said, "Look, just remember that I did that, okay? Because I'm feeling really weird right now." And she said, "Well, what happened?" I said, "I'll tell you in the morning." I couldn't put my thoughts together. It was all jumbled. So anyway, I went back to bed. The morning I woke up, got ready, was going to work. Back then I wasn't working in my own business like I am now. I was working as a consultant. So I got up, get ready to go. And she grabs me by the scruff of the neck and says, "Are you going to tell me why you hit me in the middle of the night?" And I went, "Oh, my gosh, I forgot all about that. I had totally forgotten."
Wow.
And I explained what happened, and she said to me, "You have problems with your vision? Are you okay?" I thought maybe I was having a stroke. I didn't know. You can have them at any age. Mm-hmm. Well, anyway, that came and went. And then the third night is when the following happened. I woke up again, except this time I was as awake as I am now, just like before, and I couldn't move. Now, I said, "All right, I'm in a hypnopompic state. My body, the motor controls aren't quite connected. I'm at that little edge of sleep location." I said, "Oh, that's cool. That kind of feels neat." And then I said, "Well, wait a minute. I can't make myself move. I'm like absolutely frozen. I'm wide awake, and I couldn't move." And so I went to look toward the window because I could see out of the corner of my eye, the peripherally, I could see the shape of the window in the light. And in the moment when I tried to move my eyes, I couldn't move my eyes. My eyes were frozen, fixed forward.
Wow.
And that was very frightening. Now I started to panic. I thought, "Oh my gosh, I've had some kind of I did have a stroke, and it hit me tonight. I mean, I really did. I thought that something happened. I was paralyzed. I had a traumatic spine injury or something. I was very conscious." That's when I saw that somebody was in the room. And the other thing I noticed was I was trying to listen for any sounds, and there was dead silence. I mean, total silence. I know what someone who's deaf and has profound hearing loss knows. I know what they feel. I know what they sense. I know what that absolute silence is.
Right.
Because I couldn't hear myself breathing. I couldn't hear it through bone conduction. I couldn't hear the heartbeat. I didn't know I was breathing. I couldn't feel my body.
Wow.
I just felt totally detached from anything corporeal. It was scary as you can imagine. And then this being, which I couldn't really see very well, I only saw it in silhouette, something approached the bed and extended what I guess was a hand, and in a hand was this long, thin, white, translucent, lit-up kind of wand. It was white.
Mm-hmm.
Like a white thing about the diameter of a pencil, but imagine a pencil 20 inches long or something, and it was just going back and forth in my vision in front of my face. That's what I remember. And then, bang, it was morning.
Wow.
And I was on my belly, and I was suddenly awake and realized I can't breathe. And I pushed off the pillow, and that's when I noticed that I was, face down in blood. And I ended up looking at this pillow full of blood, and I looked at my hands, and my hands were actually completely clean, absolutely clean. I thought maybe I did something with my nose in the middle of the night or whatever. Mm-hmm. My hands were completely clean.
Was it nose where the blood came from?
Yes, it was out of my left sinus, my left nostril.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt, when I touched it, I felt like I'd been punched in the face as hard
wow.
as possible. And, you know, you only have my word for this, but Jody, my wife, does not move in her sleep. Once she's asleep, she's gone.
That's why you had to shove her so hard.
That's right. You know, that's right. And in any case, you know, I thought it was going to pass. I thought whatever it was would go away. She remembers the blood. I mean, because I told her all about it, and it was kind of frightening to her. And then it went away, and I couldn't really breathe out of that nostril. I could a little bit, but not much. I thought maybe I'll give it a couple weeks because, you know, maybe I injured it somehow. I don't know. Almost didn't even remember the event, okay? And then, like I said, it took me almost 2 years. And when I finally went to the doctor, he noticed that there was a mass up there. And when he took out the mass, of course I could breathe perfectly fine. And he said it's just an ordinary nasal polyp thing that people get. And I said, but can those seed around foreign objects? And he says, you mean like splinter, like a machinist or something? I go, yeah. He goes, yeah, that can happen. That can irritate him and cause him to inflame like that, yeah. I said, can you check that? And this is where we come in with the story.
Right.
And I told you before, and he did, and they did, and they sent it to pathology, and that's it. We never saw it again. And it never got a report back.
It's incredible because your story is similar to other stories out there. And
I didn't know any other stories.
Right,
you
right.
That's just the whole thing. Mm-hmm. I mean, at the time, this is before I got back into MUFON. I hadn't been paying attention to any abduction stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I got to tell you, since that episode, which was like 14, 15 years ago, my youngest son had an experience where he had to start sleeping with us when he was like 7 or 8. He's 12 now. He was 7 or 8, and he had to sleep with us every night. And
wow.
I asked him why, and he said, oh, I'm just scared. You know, okay. He didn't say a word. So finally I pressed him, and he started to cry. And I said, Hunter, what's wrong? And his response was the following quote, which is it's scary, and I'll never forget it. He said, quote, I'm afraid the aliens are going to come through my window and take me again.
Wow. And had you ever told him your story?
No.
Right, which I imagine you wouldn't have, but...
Especially no. I'm a responsible parent, you know, in spite of what, you know, you say. But anyway...
Gotten back to you?
Yeah, I know, you know, I mean, people talk. I want to hear people talk. But then, you know... Finally, he got over that, and he's sleeping fine again. He's forgotten all about it. I am not reminding him. And by the way, that was well before I got back into MUFON.
Wow. What do you think happened to you?
You know, it could all have been an immense dream. It could all have been a strange thing. And now there's people going, oh, yeah, right. Come on, it's obvious. Well, believe me, I also believe in the obvious as well. I believe that there was something in the room that night. I believe that something got shoved into my sinus. And I believe that when they took it out, whatever it was that they found probably looked odd to them, and they probably contacted someone who could look at it further. That's why it vanished, and because it finally made it to a circle somewhere where people say, whoa, let's check this out. And, you know, just, you know, don't give any reports. Tell them nothing.
Right.
Kind of thing.
Which happens, so you know. There are people who have sent material or other things to PhDs or universities, and they don't get it back. They're told, oh, it was nothing. Well, can I get it back? No, we threw it away, or we don't know where it is,
yeah.
You know, because it was nothing. Don't worry about it.
Yeah, I know. That's very true.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the last event, to finish this out, was about 3 years ago. We were sleeping, and we were both, my wife and I, both awakened at 2 in the morning by something dropping in the attic. Now, the house we're in now is actually three floors. It's a nice house. It's up over a lake. And, you know, that third floor way up there is the attic. Now, the attic is sealed off from the rest of the house with a door on the outside that is latched to the wall from the outside. There's no way in unless that door is off, and you can't put it back on once you go inside.
Mm-hmm.
We heard someone walking around up in that attic.
Wow.
And I thought, we both thought it was one of the kids because it was little feet, and it was turning. You could hear grit under the ball of the foot as it was turning, and it got to the end of the wall and turned, and it was walking like, you know, pat, 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 turn, pat, 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 turn, you know, and you could hear it. And we could follow with our eyes the sound across the ceiling from our bedroom below. We could follow the sound. And I said to her, I go, what are the kids doing up there? And she goes, I don't know, but that makes me irate. So I just jumped out of bed. I did. I jumped out of bed, and I turned on their light, and they were both in bed.
Wow.
And so that's when I said, they're both here. And she goes, I'm calling the police. And because of the nature of the work I do, you know, my model making work, I do work for the Navy and stuff. So when I called the police, they were here in like 25 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
And they come charging up the driveway with their spotlights aimed at the house. They get out of the cars, and they start walking around the house looking for any sign of any entry into the house. And we're both outside, you know, in our jammies. Okay, that was a sight, Alejandro, let me tell you.
I don't want to see that.
Yeah, trying to look like I know what I'm talking about when I'm standing there in my, you know,
Superman pajamas.
Yeah, my pop-up builder pajamas or whatever it was. I don't know. Well, anyway, they found nothing, and we found nothing. And so the next day I was going to go up into that attic. And when I tried to go up into the attic, Hunter came up to me and said, oh, you're going to go up there again? I go, what do you mean? Were you up there? Yeah, I went up there this morning because I wanted to go get some of the World War II stuff that your dad brought back. So I went up there and looked, and Hunter had been up there, you know, around, I don't know, 9, 10 in the morning when he got up. I didn't go up there yet. This happened earlier at 2 in the morning.
Uh-huh.
I went up there, and any evidence that there might have been was gone because he was up there moving stuff around and pushing stuff around. He had no idea what had happened up there that night.
Right.
So, you know, now, had I known of Chuck Modlin, okay,
yeah.
I would have had Chuck up there in a heartbeat, okay, looking for any kinds of physical trace evidence, you know,
mm-hmm.
with his equipment. But at the time, I didn't know, and so finally, you know, when I got the opportunity to start looking into MUFON again, you know, obviously the history is the history. I moved into this position here and have been going strong. So, maybe it's a bunker to some, but boy, oh boy, you know, I hope my experience has shown people that I'm certainly no non-believer.
Sure. Right. Exactly. So, yeah, a lot going on. And see, and that's what the kind of stuff, because I remember, you know, I was able to hear a little bit about this, but not in detail like you just shared with us now. So that was great. And it's incredible because it's similar to, for instance, I've been to an abductee's house the night after they were taken and heard those pounding on the roof.
Kidding me.
And banging and stuff like that. So, which is crazy and terrifies the residents of the house. And I know it's a similar experience. There's someone in the chat actually that was saying that is just floored because they're saying, holy cow, that's the same experience I had, very similar, and I've never told anybody.
Kidding.
So, yeah.
Wow. That's outrageous. I never knew that.
Yeah, that's what's incredible. That's what's incredible about the whole abduction phenomena is that all of these people, you know, of various walks of life experiencing very similar things. And like you, they had never heard of other people having these experiences before.
Wow. Well, you know, Bud Hopkins had said to me, he goes, you know, if I ever want to come down, you know, to Manhattan and, you know, sit down with him and bring my son. He goes, he'd be happy to talk to us both and see what's going on and try and get at it. You know, Bud and I became friends back in San Jose, actually, when I did that first talk back when you were
right
to MUFON.
Mm-hmm.
So that was my entry point back in because of the drone case, you know, back then, the California drones.
Yeah, we're going to take just a really quick break here, so, you know, so we can refresh ourselves for a second, just a couple minutes here, and then we'll come back and we'll talk about the drone case and some other cases you've been working on. You're listening to Open Minds Radio with Mark D'Antonio. We'll be back in just a couple short minutes.
Open Minds Magazine, the exciting new publication by Open Minds Production, is in stores now. Open Minds Magazine is your look inside the fascinating world of UFO-related phenomena, including extraterrestrials, abductions, cattle mutilations, crop circles, alien implants, and more. Open Minds Magazine provides readers with current research, investigations, and news, all delivered in a stunning graphical presentation. Pick up your copy today and prepare to have your mind open. That's Open Minds Magazine, available now at Barnes & Noble, Borders, and online at openminds.tv.
Having been referred to as the CNN of UFOs, OpenMinds.tv is the hub for news relating to the alien UFO phenomenon. With daily updates of exclusive photos, videos, merchandise, and investigations, OpenMinds.tv is bringing UFO and extraterrestrial research to a global audience. The website features the Open Minds store stocked with books, DVDs, and other merchandise, including Open Minds magazine. Visit OpenMinds.tv, the definitive source for UFO-related news. That's www.openminds.tv.
Open Minds Production is proud to present the 20th anniversary of the International UFO Congress, coming to its new home at the Radisson Port McDowell Resort and Casino in Scottsdale, Arizona. This is the premier annual event for UFO researchers, enthusiasts, and the general public with an interest in mysterious phenomena. Come listen to expert ufologists, government officials, and respected scientists presenting information relating to UFOs, extraterrestrials, crop circles, abductions, cover-ups, and more at the largest UFO conference in the country. The 20th anniversary of the International UFO Congress takes place February 23rd through February 27th. Visit UFOCongress.com for more information, including sponsorship and vendor opportunities.
Welcome back to Open Minds Radio. Here now, former official spokesperson for the Mutual UFO Network, your host of Open Minds Radio, Alejandro Rojas.
All right, thank you, Bob, for that wonderful rejoin introduction. And we're talking with Mark D'Antonio, the photo analyst for MUFON. And let's get into some of your professional life. You talked about how you work for the Navy, and you have company FX Models, which people can find at fxmodels.com, some cool stuff. And yep, that's kind of how you deal with imagery.
Yeah, you know, what's interesting is, you know, my business started its life as a physical model-making company, meaning that we would make physical reproductions of things. And the Navy angle, you know, people say, you know, uh-oh, Navy, look out, government plant, all that stuff. Nothing could be further from the truth. If anything, you know, this is the kind of work that, you know, people like that might shy away from. You know what I'm saying?
Cause, yeah, they don't want to go to a civilian independent contractor and say, hey, we recovered this UFO. Can you make a model of it?
Yeah, right. Yeah, that's exactly right. And now, the kind of work I do, you know, some of it we can talk about, some of it we can't. I mean, and that's
right,
because, you know, now most of my work, though, is in the submarine arena. So mm-hmm. I spend a lot of time under the water surface, you know, so many of my models belong under the water surface or in outer space. You know, that's kind of, I don't seem to do anything on Earth. I do everything, you know, on the land. I do everything underwater or out in space, so outer space, inner space. Which I joke around and say, you just change the sign on the pressure equation and you're all set. You know? You go from one to the other. But truthfully, the Navy angle, yeah, I do a lot of work for them. I'm a contractor, and I work for defense companies as well. And I work out of my home. My studio's here.
Yeah. So essentially, if they want to have a model made of, let's say, possibly a prototype or something, you're the type they'd go to, and that would be the nature of why it would be secret, because they don't want people to know about their prototypes or whatever.
Yeah, and, you know, some of it is just company proprietary stuff and,
right,
and stuff. And the nice thing that I think is interesting is that, you know, I meet with engineers all the time who are part of, you know, companies that are these big defense companies or whatever. I sit with the engineering teams, and I'm just a model maker, so they don't assume I have any background, you know, that can be relevant to a discussion of engineering. But what's, you know, the truth, the humble truth, is that my degree is astronomy, which was almost all physics and almost all high-end math.
Right.
So, engineering is just another set of equations, not mm-hmm. belittling it in any way, because
right.
it's a whole discipline in unto itself, of course. But I can understand, you know, stress equations and how metal reacts to fatigue. I mean, I can understand all that stuff. I can't spot the equations, nor can I work them, because I've never, you know, really seen them, but I understand the concepts and I can hold a conversation with people about it. But, and that's the nature of the skill set I bring to the table for them. So, that makes it so that, you know, they're comfortable with me, they know that when I come in with pre-knowledge, and that's helpful. Now, when it comes to doing UFO-related things, part of that knowledge base was we do 3D illustrations as well. We do animations. We show realistic video. It looks like it's being shot in the camera. You know, you account for shadows, particles in water. I mean, you account for the things that make the imagery look real. It's photorealism, but with moving pictures. And you see it all the time in every movie that's out there now. In fact, audiences are saturated with this computer-generated
yeah.
world. And that said, we have to be able to have a skill set as investigators with MUFON or with open minds that is above and beyond what animators generally use in and of themselves.
Mm-hmm.
We need to have that ability to say, this is an animation and here's how I can prove it.
Yeah.
You mentioned the California drones earlier.
Right.
I mentioned California drones. But that was a case where when I first saw the imagery and Steve Richmuth, Northern California, MUFON, Steve and I knew each other through submarining, by the way, just so you know. We were friends long before we ever knew anything about MUFON. And the funny thing is, Steve said, well, Mark, I saw on your website you do animation and computer-generated stuff. Can you just look at these images for me and tell me what you think? Because I was suspicious that they might be computer-generated or something like that, how it went. And I looked at them, and I said, well, Steve, not only are these computer-generated, I can prove it, and here's how. And I proceeded to show him how programs that generate these kinds of images work.
And these are the drones?
Yes.
Okay, right.
Yeah, yeah. And I showed him, you know, that the truth is in the shadows, because these rendering programs that make these photorealistic imagery, these rendering programs really, really falter in some ways, not with making objects look real to the general public, but in making the physics right, the stuff that we know as hardcore folks that like to dig into that stuff, making the physics look right is much harder.
Mm-hmm.
And I detected that this particular set of photos was all wrong. Cameras don't work the way this particular set of imagery would show. Now, the camera knowledge comes from my astronomy background, where I spent years in professional observatories taking pictures with 20 and 30-ton telescopes, and then taking pictures, gosh, tens of thousands of pictures of my own cameras out with my telescopes. And
sure.
Over time, I've taken every single bad picture you can take in astronomy. I've taken it. And you learn to see all the mistakes. You learn how cameras work. It becomes second nature. So when I saw how the drone was being shot, for instance, against a backdrop of a very bright sky and the sun partially in one of the views, well, I know how cameras work, and I know that the drone would have been nearly a silhouette in that case. And if they adjusted the camera to make the bottom shaded side of the drone look brighter, then the sky would have been almost pure white. But the sky was blue all the way to the edges of the frame. And right there, without even analyzing the image itself for computer-generated telltale signs of computer-generated nature, just from that alone, we knew that that was fake. because cameras don't work that way. In fact, one of the little pieces of this drone chip was extended all the way into the glare of the sun, and it was still just as bright and clean on the bottom and readable as the rest of the drone far away on the other side.
Mm-hmm.
They don't work. That's not how cameras work. So,
well, that's,
you know,
one of the things I thought. The bottom of the, because the backdrop was so bright, the bottom of the craft seemed to be too well lit, which later is what people like you kind of were saying with the shadows not being correct.
Well, more than that, if they just took a time exposure, then the bottom could be, you know,
more bright
too. Oh, sure. And you assume that, well, maybe they took a time exposure, but the thing was moving.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's a little bit problem there. So assume he got lucky. Okay, well, assume he got lucky. You now have to look at every element of the craft. Even in the thinnest parts of the craft, you still had a clean, nicely illuminated area. In one of the little spines, for those that hadn't seen these drones, they look like, imagine a car tire in the center with spines sticking straight out, like studs, like, you know, winter studs sticking out of the tire. Imagine lots of those spines, and that's kind of what these drones look like. And then there were spines going straight up into the air. The side ones were thicker and longer and tapered. And what's interesting is the spines that were on the side going out toward the sun, those did not show any signs of what you would see if a camera that has a meter in it was functioning like it should.
Mm-hmm.
It was an artificially created lighting. It was very clear. And the coup de grace was in looking at the deep shadows. When you looked inside the deep shadows, you saw overlapping rings like donuts, thick donuts overlapping each other. That's the coup de grace. That was because they didn't use enough samples, what they're called digital samples, in the program that they use to make this picture. When you generate the shadows, when it generates the shadows, it calculates the light rays and where they go and where they hit. Wherever the light rays hit, you get a little donut. Now, if you use millions of these, then the donuts overlap so much that they all look smooth and it looks perfect. All right? I say millions. It already uses millions. I'm talking about probably tens and hundreds of millions. If you're willing to wait, in other words, for 2 to 10 hours for the image to generate, you could probably get a very nice-looking image, okay? But if you only waited about an hour or hour and a half and you didn't use enough of these samples, then you would end up with an image that had problems in the deep shadows, and they had problems in the deep shadows for every single one of the images.
Well, you know, Ruben, our colleague in MUFON, wanted me to ask you a question. Is there software now that even that in some of these, because the drones were pretty sophisticated, but even in these cut-and-paste jobs, is there software now that will be able to take out some of the artifacts so you can't tell it's a cut-and-paste job?
Oh, Ruben. Good to hear from you, even indirectly. I like Ruben. He's a really
good
guy.
Yeah, he's a great guy.
You know, there are programs, and in fact, there are 3D systems like we use here that are able to remove the artifacting in a way that might make it look most real. For instance, the regular way that images are rendered are with a renderer that uses something called GI, okay, global illumination. Those GI makes renders look wonderful. But there's other types of renderers. One type of renderer that we use is a physical renderer. What that is it's a rendering engine, which is a piece of software, which attaches to our normal computer 3D system. And when it generates an image, it's going to take a very long time. And the reason is because it's actually computing every single ray from light that comes in.
Wow.
And that means that what you can get in the end might very well be truly indistinguishable from a real photo. Now, there's a number of products like that. We have a couple of them here. You know, they're not cheap, but they're also not that terribly expensive. It's not something that only a company can buy, believe me.
Mm-hmm.
These are things that individuals who do this for a living would certainly have on hand. And these physical renderers, you know, they increase the challenge. However, because they take so long, it's pretty well guaranteed that it's going to take quite a while to generate good imagery. For instance, you can link a whole bunch of computers together. I have about 10 here in my office, my shop. And, you know, we could link, say, 3 or 4 of these together and shorten the amount of time it takes to render, because all 4 can work on creating the image. And that will speed up the time quite a bit. And in a very fairly short amount of time, you get a really, really nice image. But you still have to go far longer in order to give yourself an image that looks like a true photograph under scrutiny. When you zoom in, you know,
yeah,
you want it to look like a digital image, you know, like a TIFF file or something.
And unfortunately, some people are motivated enough because they want that fortune and glory they think they're going to want to get from faking these things that they're motivated enough to wait the time and to do what it takes. Well, I wanted to ask you, out of all the pictures you've analyzed, because you know, I personally know a lot of them that you've looked at that you've been able to discover weren't actually were hoaxes or otherwise, what are some pictures and or videos that you've seen that make you scratch your head that you think, wow, this is probably real or you can't figure out?
I'm glad you asked, because I have a few that I can think of offhand, but one in particular that I want to mention, because the others are kind of works in progress right now. But this is one, I saw this when I was in Denver just a couple months back, right? When were we all there? I can't remember.
July? Yeah, so just a couple months ago, mid, late July.
Okay. Yeah, and when I did the talk out there, I met with a woman who came all the way, she came an hour and a half out to talk to me. She wasn't part of the conference. She was just coming because she didn't know where to turn.
Wow.
And she knew that there was going to be some people that had some experience with photos or whatever. So I offered to talk to her. And when I sat with her, she showed me a picture on her phone. She said, I know it just looks like this strange top hat looking thing. And it looked like a silver top hat for all the world. It wasn't a clear photo. It was at some distance, but it was at the beach, and it was looking out over the water. My first thought was, oh, okay, a balloon maybe, a kite, you know, well, I can analyze, look for string, see if it's a tethered object, blah, blah, blah. But then she gave me her testimony of what she saw. And her response, she said, I was at the beach, and I was standing next to a group of people who unfortunately didn't speak any English, she goes. But what happened was this object, the silver object, was mesmerizing everyone at the beach. And they were all looking at it, she said. And it would come toward the beach, she said. And when it did, I have to tell you, it was very frightening. And then it would go away from the beach. All right? And then she said it finally disappeared over the horizon. And when it did that, all the people that didn't speak English next to me started clapping, going, woohoo, wow, yay. Yeah, like it was some kind of show.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, then they went about their business, you know, talking about it, I guess. Yeah, now, that case, for instance, is a perfect example of something you were talking about before, where the photo doesn't do justice to the event.
Right.
And, you know, as MUFON's chief photo and video analyst, I am keenly aware of that.
Right.
So the first thing I do when I get a picture is, I look at the picture. I don't read the case. I want the picture to stand on its own merits.
Right.
I don't want influence from the case. I never read the case until I look at the picture and say, okay, well, I clearly see this as Jupiter because here's the stars and here's exactly where Jupiter is. It's a 100% alignment with Jupiter. Therefore, I'm 99.9% sure this is just Jupiter. And then if you read the case and the witness says, well, it was dancing all around the sky, then that's not what they saw.
Right.
Because what I'm seeing is Jupiter. They saw something else. I mean, that's the optimistic side of how I look at it.
Right.
You know, what I saw with Jupiter, what you photographed was not what you saw. Because what I'm looking at was nothing that dances around the sky. It's Jupiter. See, look, there's the moon around Jupiter.
One, people don't know. They take some pictures hoping they got something, and then they look at the pictures, and to an untrained eye, they think, well, that kind of looks like what we saw, or maybe that's what we saw. And if they saw a light in the sky, of course, a bright light in the sky is going to be, you know, similar to what they saw, even if it's not the exact thing.
You're absolutely right.
And it's hard to photograph a light in the sky. It's nearly impossible. I was doing it this weekend, and, you know, things get fuzzy and just playing with my camera, and it's very difficult to do.
Oh, yeah. And you know, as an example, I got another case which I thought was interesting. And this goes back to a known, but I got to share this with you because it really was fun. It is, for all the world, a white disc-shaped craft in the distance over the trees with lights on it and stuff. And I was like, wow, and that is in the air. It was in the air.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm looking at it. I'm going, that's incredible. Wow, maybe this is it. Let's get the details. So I started zooming in on it, and I saw some modeling on the face of it. So I did what's called a convolution matrix. So what that is, you know, for the listeners, there's some that may know this. A convolution matrix is a mathematical algorithm you apply to a picture, and depending on how you set up this matrix mathematically, it can do special things to the picture. It can make edges on one side look sharper than edges on another. It can make all the edges look sharper. It can soften things. It can, you know, enhance certain areas, that kind of thing. And if you know how to handle the convolution matrix, then you can do that. It didn't take a lot to learn. I mean, you just read about it, and boom, you know what you're doing. You know, it takes some time to experiment. But I've had a few years playing with it, so I kind of have a, you know, I kind of set a few up that I have set up standard in my head. And as I looked at this object, I started to see something geometric in the center, and I started looking at it, and I went, oh, I can see, oh, I think I see letters, actually. And I started to look through it. I'm like, well, wait a minute, are those characters? Or I couldn't tell what kind of letters they were. Finally, I saturated the image with color. And I sat back and squinted at it. And I said, Sanyo. It's the Sanyo blimp.
Oh, no. How funny.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it was like about 30 minutes of time I spent,
yeah.
And I was like, oh, incredible. But, you know, to look at it, you'd never think that was a blimp because you didn't see the fins, you didn't see the gondola.
Yeah.
You saw lights at each end, and you saw red and green lights, which always indicate to me that it's possible you should investigate the aircraft avenue because that's important to do.
That's funny.
Red and green lights. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, well, I mean, just not too long ago, the MetLife blimp was here, and it was way off in the distance in between a couple of hills. I saw something moving huge, moving slowly between these few hills. And I was like, what the? And, you know, I got my binoculars, and which I always carry in my car now, and I was able to see it was just a blimp. But they can look very impressive. They're large. They move slow, and sometimes the gondolas are difficult to see against a huge blimp balloon area.
That's right.
That's funny. That's a cool case. You taken a look at the Phoenix Lights video, the famous video?
I've seen there was actually two events, correct, in the Phoenix Light. One was a flare event, and then one was the true unknown event.
Well, that's what I want to ask you about. If you've seen video from the 10 o'clock, and the reason I ask, and I've been really on this kick lately, is I just moved south of the Phoenix area, about 25 miles south of South Mountain, and I drive then every day, you know, down the highway in the middle of the desert because that's all reservation, and it's flat, and I just can't not understand. Barry Goldwater is another 30, 40 miles behind me. So I don't understand how these flares could have been seen. And is it possible, maybe I'm wrong, they could have been seen, you know, like 90 miles away or 80 miles away?
I can tell you this. Airplane landing lights are visible from 80 miles away.
Mm.
And when they turn them on, they usually turn them on approximately 70 to 75 miles out. You know, some of the folks who fly in the audience can clarify that. But the commercial jets typically, you know, anywhere from 70 to 80 miles an hour, those landing lights could come on. And you can see them very, very clearly. And so it is possible that you might be able to see those that distance. Now, that's just from having seen aircraft at long distance and also having read accounts of aircraft at long distance.
Yeah.
You can see the afterburners of jets from a very long distance, especially if you're looking right up the tailpipe. You know, and those actually look very strange because
which you don't want to do at a close distance.
Yeah, I know, huh?
Don't do that a few feet away, people.
No, no way. Yeah, those of you who live near, you know,
well, great. Thanks, Mark. You just debunked another case for me.
Oh, no, no. I'm just saying that the flares can be visible. I'm not saying that's what was seen in the Phoenix Lights case.
Yeah, it's just interesting because it just really floors me, you know, once I put two and two together driving home one day at night. And I've seen flares on those exercises in Colorado Springs, and they were, you know, just a couple miles away, and it looked similar to what the Phoenix Lights was. But when, you know, I was thinking, wow, what the heck? You know, how could they have been so bright and so far away?
The other thing, too, is I saw a parachute flare drop.
Uh-huh.
At one point, and I received video of what was also purported to be a similar Phoenix Lights type episode,
mm-hmm.
and it was actually, I think, in England. And what I noticed when I did some video processing, one of the things I noticed was that these lights were giving off had a reddish glow around them. Well, this reddish glow was also traveling, and the reddish glow was moving upward. It was smoke.
Mm.
And they were flickering because when you zoomed in on them, you could actually see that there was a random flicker, sort of a flame source for them. So that British case, I was able to show that those were, you know, those were actually flares, you know, parachute flares. Now, the other thing was, at one point, another giveaway was that the first one to light up was the first one to stop.
Ah, right.
And you saw it, you know, fade out. And as it began to fade out, you know, you could see the smoke, you know, dim around it and all that. And then the other ones beyond it and around it did the same thing, but in order. So, you know, that was the British case. Now, with the Phoenix Lights case, I know that the lights were fading at one point. I know the flare event acted to me like a flare event for that particular one, but that wasn't the only case.
Right,
there was another case of lights.
Right, that was at 10 o'clock, so later in the day, but there were lots of sightings. And now that I've lived here, I hear from more people all the time out here who saw that thing. And we're going to have Frances Barwood speak at the Congress about, she was a city councilwoman, about all the reports she took. But there are tons and tons of people out here who saw that stuff.
Yeah. And I know that that's a problem with the Phoenix cases because there was, again, if I recall, there was an actual flare drop event. But there was also, I think that came after the actual event. I believe. Now, again, people will correct me who were...
No, you're right. You're right. But we are out of time. So
thank you,
Mark, for being on the show. I think we got through a lot of really cool stuff. And if this was people's introduction to you, then certainly I would think, wow, no, this guy is Mr. He's an abductee, for goodness sakes, you know.
Or they're going to run the other way, Alejandro.
Yeah, this guy's crazy. No, thanks for being on the show. We'll have you on again.
It's
wonderful to have you in this field to be able to look at some of this stuff. So keep up the incredible work, buddy.
Thanks, Alejandro. Thank you and Open Mind.
Thanks. So, Mark, actually, you can see some of his stuff online. Did speak at the Congress and at MUFON, so those videos are online to see. Next week, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to have Leslie Keene. She wrote the book, UFOs, Generals, Pilots, and Government Officials. If you haven't heard about this book, turn on your television, because she's all over the news. She's all over the newspapers. People are talking about this book because she's got a lot of very high-level people that have written some papers about UFO experiences, including Fife Symington, who was the governor during the Phoenix Lights, the governor of Arizona. So a lot of really cool stuff. Check it out on next week's show, 7 p.m., and we'll be just back from the X-Fest in California. That's where I'm going to be speaking this weekend. So that's going to be a lot of fun, too. See more of that on openminds.tv. Openminds.tv. Get your hat. Talk to you later. Bye.